Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the 84th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nestlone, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. Just like to welcome everyone back. This is our first time recording in about a month or so. Hopefully you haven't missed a beat. And we've released those episodes once a week over the last month, but we're actually recording all four episodes tonight for the next month. And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using EduAllStars, hashtag EduAllStars, and we love seeing those conversations and hear about things that stick out during the interview.
We are really excited to speak with our special guest today, who is Sam Patterson. He has taught in independent Jewish schools for the last 11 years in the subjects of English, writing, photography, algebra, algebra 2, and pre-calculus, and he currently teaches K-5 technology in California. He's also widely known for his EduPuppets. So, Sam, thanks for coming on with us tonight.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, Sam, we always like to start with our guests just kind of hearing a little bit of background about them and their journey into education. So what's your story?
Sure. I was very, very much career focused in college. I double majored in both English and rhetoric to take full advantage of all of the amazing opportunities out there in the language arts. And on completion of college, I had a lot of competing offers, as you can imagine, being courted by a lot of folks. But Hallmark had just moved their poetry division overseas, so I ended up going to graduate school to get an MFA in creative writing. And towards the end of that, I was actually really fortunate because I connected with the San Diego Area Writing Project. And I don't know if you're familiar with the National Writing Project, but it is an amazing organization that actually started in the Bay Area, and it's very much focused on teachers who are writers helping other teachers be better teachers of writing. And they do that by getting teachers to be writers. It's very writer-focused, really gave my career a lot of direction and inspired me to constantly be looking for ways to get students to figure out that they had something to say to the world and, you know, figure out how to do that. And then I got really lucky because Al Gore invented the internet and then there were blogs. And once I discovered as an English teacher that my students could do all of their writing online instead of in a notebook. Well, my chiropractor was really, really sad about that because I needed to be adjusted a lot less often. But I was really excited because then I felt like there might be hope for me getting all of my students' work read because I wasn't going to be the only one doing the reading. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of my connected educator journey started there when I started looking at, you know, if I can get my students' work out there, what next? And started to look at what other teachers were doing. And then I got an opportunity after teaching high school, mostly English, and I taught some algebra, some art, did a lot of here and there kind of teaching, but my passion has always been writing. I got the opportunity to do K-5 tech. And because I'm a well-trained English teacher, a lot of what we do in tech looks like writing, right? We're going to talk about how to make a learning video. It's going to have several significant parts. The second grade teachers got right on board and were like, remember that paragraph you're building? Where are these five parts? You know, and started talking about how do we organize the text of a video. And, you know, you can do that work all the way down to kindergarten. So what's interesting is when I started teaching high school, I was really excited because you could really begin to teach argument with high schoolers because they were competent enough in writing to begin to actually construct arguments. But if you're constructing an argument not in writing but in something like speech, their competencies are at a much, you know, earlier level. So you can actually get kindergartners to put together coherent short videos about what they're learning, which is just super powerful metacognition. So we'll pause there and pretend like I know that I've answered the question.
So it looks over the last year, the last 11 years, you worked in the independent Jewish schools. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to go that route rather than like just the public school system?
A lot of it was, it was a combination of two things. One, I decided after I finished my master's in creative writing that I wanted, the next time I went to school, I wanted it to be for a doctorate instead of for a teaching credential. And I was lucky in that one of my colleagues in the National Writing Project was at, working at a high school where they were just starting their 12th grade and they needed an AP Lit teacher. So I was teaching college freshmen, and I was like, AP Lit? Sure, that's almost college freshmen. I can do that, right? And this is one of those things where, you know, a lot of times opportunities look like they might have been traps because you show up, and the job where you were hired to teach AP Lit to high school seniors, basically, right, it's there's 8 kids in the class. 8. That's because there's only like 12 kids in the 12th grade because, you know, they're brand new. But no problem. We've got you covered. We've got you full time. No worries because we've got 75 eighth graders for you to work with in this humanities class because you can certainly do that because you've taught college freshmen. And I was very lucky because the administrator of that school was awesome and really good at supporting teachers and helped me through a couple of, you know, predictable new guy missteps over the first couple years, but really helped me see how important it was to connect with kids and get to know them and really, like, you know, one of the amazing things about independent schools is how much you can bank on community, how much you can talk about character. Even though I'm not Jewish, working in a Jewish school teaching English was awesome because you could have all of these conversations that talked about religion and faith and morals that are at the center of a lot of pieces of literature that working in a public setting you wouldn't have the opportunity to explore to that depth.
Right.
Sure.
So I want to jump right into the EduPuppets. How did those come to be? And for our visitors who don't know what the EduPuppets are, tell us a little bit about that as well.
Sure. Here's Waka. Hey there. So the EduPuppets, yeah, he's bad at telling this story because he gets, you know, whatever. But it was like a practical problem. He finally got, what are these, computers that could make video, and he didn't want to see his own face on video because it's, you know, boring in his own face. And it was also a prep issue, right? Like, I figured out I could make these short videos for class, but I had to do it crazy early in the morning. I'd go to school, and I had a key so I could get in, and then I would, like, prep a video for an hour, and then I would go to the gym. Well, if I'm showing up in the video, then I have to actually get ready and look like I'm ready to teach before I go to the gym, which is not the normal order of things and requires more time. And all of this isn't that precious, like, oh, doesn't everybody get up at 4:30 to go to work time? You know, it's like, no, if I don't have to, I'd love to not, but I have at points. So I realized that, you know, with a MacBook Pro at that time and Camtasia, I could do green screen work pretty easily. And, you know, that was what I grew up with. Like, I learned in front of, you know, all credit to my parents. They parked me in front of the right television shows, right? Like, I totally learned with Reading Rainbow and Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street and some of the Electric Company, not so much. But, like, those were amazing experiences to me. And when I got to see LeVar Burton at the Q conference, recently, I was kind of surprised at what an emotional experience that was to me. Like, I didn't really think, I thought, oh, yeah, right, Reading Rainbow was on. But really, like, let's count up the hours I spent with that instructor and that screen, you know, bringing in that message he was building with that video. Well, now teachers have the opportunity to do exactly that. And I found that my students, whether they're high school or elementary, love it when I make a short video with a puppet in it. So now when I'm introducing something in coding, I'm doing a how to use, like I'm doing a screencast of how to use an app, I'll take a little bit of extra time and do it with a puppet on a green screen with the app in the background or something to just make it a little more engaging. With the really little kids, it's adorable because they do talk to the screen about half of the time. So it's just fun, and at the same time, they figure out that I've made that thing, So I get to do something that's really important to me as a teacher. I get to model and share my own passion and creativity and process. And they're not always perfect pieces, right? And I strive for imperfection because I'm just trying to get this done. Mentally, I can allow it to take a little bit more time than it would normally, but it can't take a whole lot more time because we don't have time for that. And I'm doing it to make sure I'm really good at making videos because I ask my kids to make a lot of videos. And I want them to be confident video makers, and I want them to be able to use the right tools. Unfortunately, that means I have to learn to use new tools, and I only learn to use new tools by making videos. So the puppets were my solution to being able to make a lot of videos and have a much better time. The frame rate on this Google Hangout is not puppet approved, so I have to talk really slow, otherwise I just look like I'm flapping. But, you know, I've always been a teacher that used a lot of humor. I think early in my teaching, especially with the high schoolers, they used more sarcasm, and it's really easy to bring that humor out in different characters using the different puppets. It's fun, and I think it's really important to pump as much fun as you can into the classroom because, really, learning is serious business. It's hard work. So, you know, putting some fun in there is not a bad idea.
So if you weren't in education, what is something that you think you'd be doing?
If I weren't in education, I don't know. Really, my world changed when a teacher – I'd be writing about something because my world changed when a teacher paid attention to the content of my writing instead of how bad my handwriting was. And, like, that was, you know, a game changer for me. So whatever I'm doing, I'd be doing something about writing. But, you know, it seems to me that being able to get kids turned on to what they're able to do that they have no clue they can do is really important work, and I can't imagine anything else I'd rather do.
What do you think an important trait for a teacher to have is? Like, what's the most important trait you think someone can have as a teacher?
Oh, you got to be able to laugh at yourself, and you got to be able to just, like, let go of stuff and roll on, right? Like, there is so much about teaching that is so intensely highly personal. There is so much ego involved in teaching because you're building, like, this educational experience with your students and you're pouring yourself into that. And when somebody doesn't like the way that you did it and they come at you, you know, for whatever reason, it can be really difficult because 9 times out of 10, it's a miscommunication. And they're operating out of, you know, whatever their context is. And although it can be really challenging not to respond from, like, an emotionally charged place, at least be able to kind of check that and go, you know, I really just need to be able to hear what they're saying and respond to them because, you know, I think that's one of the toughest things is just being able to take a step back, look at what you did, and realize you'll do better next time, right? Like, we're doing the most important work in the world every day of the year with a room full of kids, and we might not hit it every time for every kid. And while that's heartbreaking, that is not the end of the world because it can't be.
I think that's a great point. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of teachers talk about is motivating those unmotivated kids. How do you, as an educator, motivate those kids who may lack in interest in what you're doing?
You know, it's case by case. You know, I think, comes down to trying to find a way to acknowledge and connect with that student as a person, right? So many kids who are unmotivated are opting out of the game. So you have to figure out how to get around the structure of school that they are, you know, regarding as the game and actually be able to connect with them. And that can be difficult because students, you know, and I found this much more true as they get older, can put a great deal of distance between themselves and you when they choose to.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a lot about you being a writer. And I'm assuming that means you're a reader as well. Well, maybe that's a dumb assumption. I don't know. Anything you're reading right now that kind of stands out, maybe in education or otherwise?
The education books I'm reading right now, I'm reading a book on formative assessment by Douglas Fisher. That's an ASCD book, and that's really good. You know, I love the work that he's done in the past on assessing as you go. And I think that when we look at tech integration in the classroom, formative assessment is a really important thing to think about, because when you have a bunch of kids doing something slightly different in a room, figuring out where they're all at and what their strengths are is really important, because they can, especially when they're working with tech, they can really look like they've got it nailed and they know what they're doing, and they're really just faking it. So, you know, finding a way to open those pieces of communication is really important. In the world of non-education, I'm an avid audiobook listener, and I recently finished the last of the Game of Thrones books.
Cool.
So, Sam, what is, when you are having one of those days, like all of us do as educators, where it's just been a really rough day, what do you do to recenter yourself and bring it all back into focus?
Besides talk to your puppets.
Well, you know, talking to the puppets is really, you know, because the puppet and you can work it out, because you can you can be like, oh, my lesson was so bad, and the puppet can be like, oh, my goodness, you're telling me. You didn't see it from my angle. You are a fool. And then you're like, oh, I feel so much better. No, a lot of it comes down to it's been easiest to deal with those days when I'm in situations where I'm working with an amazing staff and I've got good cultivated peer-to-peer relationships on staff, and I can just, you know, go to my colleagues and be like, I cannot believe I did not have photocopies made in time for this, or, you know, what, or I didn't have a backup plan going, or the Wi-Fi didn't work again. How did I not plan on that? You know, whatever it is. And they, you know, they hear you, and they can reflect. What's nice is they know you, so they can reflect back to you, you know, what it is that you do every day and how that stumble is not a significant piece of data overall.
What about thinking back over the maybe the last year or so, what's one of the biggest things you've learned over the last year?
How to file maintenance requests for robots. No, I've learned a lot about robots and programming. When I took this position, I did it with a very high level of interest in ed tech and some expertise in some tablet-based and web-based technologies, but the position required me to do programming work and robotics work with students as young as kindergarten. So I've actually had to work pretty hard to learn the different tools and platforms that I can use and figure out really where the good learning is in each of those. And, you know, I think the lesson that I keep coming back to time and time again is a good teacher can make great learning happen, you know, through anything. It's just, how do you structure an interaction to be kind of a balance between discovery and direction so that the students have a need to figure something out, and when they do figure something out, they find it rewarding.
So, Sam, what would you say is the biggest challenge in your job or in education as a whole?
Well, education as a whole, I would say the biggest challenge is that the fundamental system of funding education is inherently broken, going back to what's that awesome text written by that awesome sociologist? Savage Inequalities. And, you know, the fact that education in so many places is tied to property tax is really problematic, and that inherent inequality is now being exploited by, you know, some of the more pernicious elements of the school reform and charter school movement. So, you know, I think one of the biggest problems facing education is there's too many people trying to get education to make money, and not nearly enough people who are putting that kind of energy into getting education to make great citizens.
Yeah, good point. What about if you could go back to yourself as a first-year teacher, what advice would you give to yourself?
Work out, like go to the gym. Seriously, man, more than you are.
Yeah, that's interesting. when I was my first year teacher, I had an AP that told me that was the first thing they said is, you know, I can tell you everything about teaching, but the biggest thing is workout. Go and make, you know, be active. And this is coming from like a 250-pound woman, you know.
Well, and
that's what happens. I mean, that's what happens.
Right, and you know, you gotta get to that point at some point during the week where everything else is gone. It's just you and your body, and you know, your however many beats per minute. You know, I run it like slow reggae speed, so you know. But it's that getting to that mental space where you have some degree of perspective, and I think that goes back to, you know, being able to kind of laugh at yourself and take measure of yourself without, you know, it being the end of the world.
Yeah. I completely agree. Sam, what is the question we always like to end on with our guests is, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
Well, what I'm passionate about right now is equity. You know, it takes a lot of different forms. Right now, I spend a lot of time talking to people about it as far as women and STEM and technology. I'm coaching a team for the Technovation Challenge, really amazing setup. If you don't know about it, you should check into it. A team of girls designs an app to respond to a need in their community. And I'm trying to line up guest speakers and get as many like women engineers and such in front of these girls as possible. And I'm working at an incredibly well-supported school in the middle of Silicon Valley, and it's hard to find women in tech who have the time to be able to come and talk to my class. I've got, right, you know, people responding saying, oh, can my husband come and talk? And I'm like, no. Because we're trying to build a system of role models that, you know, essentially is like, oh, okay, well, this is the you know, invasive, unrelenting piece of culture I'm combating right now, right? Like, will this get better? Yes, eventually. But someone was telling me about research about women in STEM and how the gender bias for math and science can be traced all the way back to body language of elementary school teachers.
Really?
Like, if Miss Smith in first grade hadn't been confident about science when she was teaching us science, then the girls in my class would have been much less likely to pursue a career in science.
That's interesting.
Wow.
You know, people always talk about the inequalities, and I'm an eighth grade science teacher myself, and I really just don't see it. I've got lots of girls that love science, and they still love it. So I wonder where that point is, where they just feel like that it's a man's field, and they kind of step away from it. I personally just don't see that, but I know it exists. I mean, you look at the jobs out there. I was in IT forever. I mean, it's a guy's world. It's dominated by men. But I wonder where it is that they kind of fall off. Is it high school, college? I mean, I don't know.
That's a good question, but it sounds like, you know, you've got a great environment there. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely do. Well, Sam, thanks so much for spending some time with us this evening. We really, really appreciate it. How can listeners connect with you?
Well, they can find my writing and work at mypaperlessclassroom.com. On Twitter, I am at SAMPATUE. And every Sunday, I'm on the Tech Educator Podcast on teachercast.tv at, I think, 7 o'clock Eastern.
Awesome. And ways you can connect with us, you can find us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ. You can find previous shows at EduAllStars.com/podcast. And you can check us out on iTunes, just searching out EduAllStars with no spaces. You can find all the previous
episodes. And we want to thank you again, Sam, and let all of our listeners know to check out the next episode with Colby Sharp.
Excellent. Thank you.